Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Well, I hope everybody had an absolutely positively awesome Thanksgiving celebration yesterday. Here at my house, it was smaller than it's been for several years, but still probably 20-something of us. So it was nice. A few family members were missing for different reasons, but we talked to everybody on the phone, and at the end of the evening, we all sat back and felt pretty content with all of the goodies all day and laughed about old times. And my favorite part of any day is when you get together with friends and loved ones and talk about, you know, things that have happened in your past, things that made you laugh, some things that made you cry, but mostly the things that bring you closer. So we did quite a bit of that last night, and it was great. I hope you and yours all did the same. I'm going to bring Shell in. We didn't have a very big week this week. We only were on the air twice, and then today. So we don't have a lot to talk about in the way of review, a few things. But there's a couple things that I thought I'd bring up today that we can talk about. Good morning, Shell. How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, it was really nice. It was really nice. And quiet for us, too, a little bit smaller than usual, which is kind of nice. You know, all the kids are adults now, except for the great nieces and nephews. But the other family members are all adults now. So it was kind of nice. Everybody wanted a quiet Thanksgiving. So we spent some time over Danny and Justin's yesterday. It was just the four of us, and they had some friends over, just a couple who has a child. But it was actually kind of quiet. So it was only six of us, and then Dawn did her own thing. Derek's in Germany, and my mom held down the fort here, and, you know, we brought her back, a festive plate. But it was nice because we cooked a bunch of dishes here and took them over. So it was like half the preparation, and then they did the other half of the meal over there. And so it was nice. It was nice. It was quiet. We played some cards. It was like a game night. Usually Thanksgiving is so hectic, you don't get to do that kind of stuff. But because it was quieter, we got to play some cards and stuff. So it was nice. You know, and then we touched base with everybody. But then we're going to spend some time with Dawn and her kids probably later today or tomorrow. So it still has the Thanksgiving feel to these 4 days. You know, it's always like a 4 day event.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. It does turn into that. It does turn into that, and I think that's half the fun of it. You know, having it carry over into the weekend. It's like Christmas. Usually Christmas lasts from Christmas Eve until New Year's Day.
Yep.
I mean, that's usually
exactly
the way that goes, too.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be enjoying it throughout the day because we have a lot of leftovers, which I was thrilled about. I always overmake because I count on living on the leftovers for at least a day or two.
Yeah, well, and that's a part of the fun, too, you know, is being able to do that. I made we had a couple things that were kind of funny. My oldest grandson, Spike, his girlfriend got a recipe from her mom and her grandma for sweet potato casserole. And she called me on the phone. She's, Grandma, I'm going to make this. And I said, wonderful. That sounds great. And I said, you know, it's always on the table on Thanksgiving. So if you don't make it, I would have made it. And she says, no, Mom gave me a new recipe, and it's the kind you make with the marshmallows in it and all this kind of stuff. I said, okay. So she gets here yesterday, and she's so upset. She says, I don't know what I did wrong, Grandma. I said, why, what's wrong with it? It looked beautiful. You know, she had it in a big, like, cake Pyrex and marshmallows on it, nicely browned, the marshmallows and everything. I said, it looks beautiful. She says, yeah, but it doesn't taste good. And I said, okay. So we put it on the table, and I just, as everybody was dishing food out, I took a little spoonful of it. And the potatoes, and she said, I baked them for like 3 hours. I said, well, then I think you must have burnt them. So we kidded her a little bit, you know, but she tried so hard. And it was a lot of work because she went out and bought a whole bunch of fresh baked potatoes. She baked them, then she peeled them. She tried to mash them. They were still crunchy, so she put them in a blender. And then when she took them out of the blender, then she tried to cook them again on the stove. I said, oh, my gosh, I don't know how you had this many problems. It was something so easy. But it was really terrible. And she put the recipe called for nutmeg, ginger, and cinnamon. And she had way too much of all of those three things in it because you could taste the powder in all three of those spices, you know. And I was like, so she was so disappointed. I said, don't be disappointed. It was a learning experience. I said,
everybody has their first meal. Everybody has that one. I remember the first year when we became vegetarian and I tried to make a tofurkey. The instructions or the directions on the back for how to cook it sounded dopey to me, so I just did my own thing, and oh my God, it was completely inedible. It came out like a rock, and I was like, so the next year, I followed the directions. I was like, well, I'm not going to do this again. Actually, I think I bought one, and I tried it again a week later, because I was like, why does everybody like this thing? It's disgusting. So I bought another one, cooked it, and it was absolutely delicious. It has really goofy cooking instructions. You wouldn't think you would have to cook it that way, and yet it came out perfect when I followed the directions. So, you know, so there you go for thinking you know more than the people that actually paid to have the box printed.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's me all over. You know, because I've been cooking for so long, I read something and say, oh, and throw it away and do my own thing.
You have to do that to it. And, yeah, you have to do mm-hmm. that to it. And then it came out perfect, you know. So, I don't like the I don't like the sweet potatoes. I know that that's like a classic Thanksgiving dish, and I've had it at so many people's homes. But it's just overwhelmingly sweet for me. I don't like the extra flavor, the extra sweet flavor. So I make savory sweet potatoes, right? I mash the potatoes, but then I put garlic, butter, garlic, and herbs in them. And it has a very savory flavor to it. And I got to tell you, it's like that's become a new family tradition now. When Danny and Justin asked us to come over, I said, well, what dishes do you want me to bring? The first thing they said was, oh, your sweet potatoes. They like the other ones. They'll still eat them with wheat on it. But now they've grown a fondness for this just because of me, and I just don't like the oversweetness of them. I did it that year probably maybe 6-7 Thanksgivings ago, and it's been a hit ever since. So that's kind of a I really just did it for myself because I can't handle the oversweet with the marshmallow, and everybody else ended up loving it too.
Well, I like sweet potatoes either way. I love a baked potato that just has butter and a little bit of salt and pepper, and I would love it with the savory spices too. It lends itself to be sweet or spicy. A sweet potato does. So I like sweet potatoes a lot. I love not very healthy, but I love sweet potato French fries. So
we talk about food.
But yeah, it was.
We talk about food so much on the show and diet, and this is the time of the year when you really realize how emotional food is. You know, like here we've started out the show, you know, we talked about family, we're talking about what we ate and stuff like that. But this is what it really shows. When you look at the advertisements, the Publix has some of the best commercials
around
the holidays because they're all firm. Family oriented. They have some fun stuff happening with the foods, you know, the foods come alive and stuff like that, or some of them are just family oriented. But it's all around the meal, and the different types of like traditional meals that somebody's looking forward to at Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever holidays, you know, you celebrate during this time, whether it be Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or the other ones. Food is very, very traditional. It carries heritage in it. It carries emotion in it, you know. And it's it is something to be said about this season, especially when you hook that knowledge up and you see how excited we got to kind of like share what we were eating and stuff, to tie that into what we were talking about earlier in the week about homelessness, people that had traditions, that had homes, and now they're homeless, and how are they going to fulfill those traditions? So it becomes both a point of thanks for you if you're in a position to be able to still carry on your traditions, but it should also be a source of compassion, realizing that there's people out there that aren't fulfilling their traditions this year because they don't even have a kitchen to cook their meals in. They don't have the opportunity to get that familiarity. And it's so I always try to donate to soup kitchens, especially at this time of the year, number one, because it's colder. It's harder for people to survive without, you know, without some food, you know, but also to give them some sense of tradition, to give them a little glimpse of where they're trying to get back to.
Well, and that's all that is really, really right on. I mean, you know, we have a friend, the man that I'm going to be partnering with in Michigan, who talks a lot about the dependency and the comfort that is derived from eating and food, specific foods. If you grow up in a household where if you're having a bad day or if you're unhappy or somebody's hurt you in the outside world, grandma or mom whip you up a batch of pancakes. From now on, pancakes will make you feel better. They just will. They'll make you feel better because no matter how old you get, you'll associate that bad day with feeling better with some pancakes. So you're right. And that's, of course, what makes it the most difficult to stay on a rigid or strict diet for different reasons. I mean, some people think of diets as just a way to not be overweight. But there's a lot of people in this world that live on specific diets due to religion, due to health reasons, due to a lot of other factors. So when they really have to give up something, it can be very difficult for them. So I'm glad you brought that up, Shelley, because that is a really, really, I don't know, that's like for everybody. That's an issue for everybody. Then some of the sickest people we ever had at the Institute were people with eating disorders, major eating disorders.
Exactly,
and again,
right.
You know, sometimes that comes from episodes in your life. Sometimes that comes from issues. Sometimes that comes from, sadly, somebody else's issues, not your own. Maybe a parent or a grandparent who has issues with food, and that becomes a part of your life as well. So, but if you just look at giving thanks and being grateful for any kind of abundance, if the abundance didn't always fall on having a huge dinner on Thanksgiving Day, and we just honed in on the abundance of family and friends, it puts a different spin on it. It doesn't become a gluttonous day and a day of, I mean, everything that I read this morning on Facebook, everybody sat around and was in a sugar coma. Everybody sat around and could barely move. The boys wanted to go play football, but nobody could get up off the couch. I mean, that's what really happens, because it's a day of overindulging with it's like a grace period of overindulging, right?
Yes. Yep.
And everybody finds it acceptable, so everybody goes overboard. But I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a big deal. And for some people, it's like saying to an alcoholic, you can't drink at all, and then on a special occasion, you hand them a glass of wine and say, well, it's okay for you to just have a glass of wine today because, you know, it's a celebration.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it's like, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's I love this time of the year. I mean, I see joy and reasons to be thankful all around the year. I'm always appreciative of my family and friends. You know that you and I are both like that. We're always very aware of how fortunate we are to have true friends and to have, you know, loving families in our lives. We both know people that literally don't have one true friend in their life. They have friends, but they don't have true friends in their lives. So you and I are extremely lucky that we do have true friends, you know. And so that's something to be fortunate around. But I love this time of the year because it starts a season. It's not a day. It's not just a holiday.
Yeah.
It's a season.
Right.
It really starts with Thanksgiving and goes through New Year's that, for the most part, can uplift people. If they're not having hard times and they don't look at it as a time of stress because now they can't do Christmas like they're used to or do the holidays like they used to, if they just go with what the sentiment of the season is and allow that to uplift them, they can get through a lean Christmas. Like I said on the show once before, we had lean Christmases. We had Christmases
Amen.
Where we got one present and we got a present that somebody made for us, and it was still a joyous time because we were brought up never forgetting what the essence of a holiday was. What is Thanksgiving all about? Yeah, we had a great time eating the food. I overate yesterday like I always do, you know, but I had fun with it. And like you said, it's the one day we excuse ourselves for it. But then we played cards, and it was a family-oriented day. And then we met some very nice people that are friends with my niece and her husband, you know. Same thing. It's a day. It's a season of really, really connecting with other people, with connecting with what the spirit of that, you know, whether you celebrate Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Christmas, know what that holiday is about and celebrate the essence of what the holiday is in addition to family. The gift giving should be an extra part of it. It should be, if you're in the position to be lavish, be lavish. If you're not, then be creative and everybody make something. You know what I'm saying? But do the holidays what they're meant for, and you'll get so much more out of them, regardless of where you're at in life.
Well, and I think a lot of us get that. I think a lot of us, some of the feelings that you're talking about come with age. Some of them, it takes a while to realize your wealth when the bank account is empty and you don't get how rich you really are. So sometimes you have to be older to get there, which is a shame because a lot of time gets wasted because of that. But I agree with you, and I also agree with the fact that it shouldn't be. And you do get to a point in your life, even the kids, you know, I mean, except for the great-grandchildren and AJ, everybody's, you know, older teenagers. The youngest is 17 now of the grandchildren, and except for AJ. And they say, Graham, I don't care. You can get me socks. They really don't care. Now, if they're really coveting something, they're of the age now where they try to figure out how to get it for themselves. They don't. You know, they don't come to me and say, Graham, will you buy me this, or I really want that, or they don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like I said last night, we had great fun talking about stories and picking on each other and laughing at each other and that kind of thing. That's always a favorite time for me, and that's what it's really all about. So I do believe in overdoing it sometimes because it's good for you to feel like you can overdo it every now and then. But I also think that, you know, you have to be able to keep things, in the right place in your own head. You know, they talked about, when we talked about feeding the homeless and we talked about the older gentleman that did that, for years and years, if you're religious, or if you've read the Bible and everything, you can go back to Jesus on the mountain and feeding all the peasants because they, you know, they had no food, and multiplying the fish and the bread and making sure everybody had enough to eat. Food is our fuel, so there must always be food. But one of the things that you and I have learned, and not for this reason have we talked about vegetarianism and all the vegetables and how you can grow your own food. We talk about it because it's healthier. But the truth of the matter is nobody has to be without food.
Right.
Nobody. Not
right.
really. Because even if all you did was plant celery and cucumbers in a planter in your sunny window in your house in upstate New York, you can live on those vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So really there is not a need. And once I think we get to that realization, once we really swallow that and have that, really let that sink in, that lets go of some of the fear. And, of course, fear is what leads us down paths that are not good for us.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And a lot of the advocacy groups for vegetarianism and veganism, a lot of the books, Diet for a New America, Diet for a New World, by John Robbins, he talks about how they've proven that if the majority of people became vegetarian, we would end starvation in a generation. Actually, we would end starvation worldwide in under 10 years. Because one of the reasons why people are going hungry is because we're using farmland that could be growing produce, plants, to feed cattle, and it takes something like 16 acres of grain and feed to feed one cow to produce 1 pound of hamburger meat, where that same 16 acres can produce enough to feed something like 1,000 human beings, but you're only feeding one cow or something. And they have all the ratios in his book. They've done all the math and everything. It's a very, very efficient use of plant-based foods, because they're feeding them to the animals and then feeding the animals to us instead of just feeding the plants to us. It's like we're putting somebody in the middle. We're putting an animal in the middle that has to eat a lot to get that size, instead of feeding the humans that would benefit from those grains. So it is a very interesting concept that vegetarianism, if it became more prevalent, would actually solve world hunger. You know, and we've created, just like animals going extinct because we over-harvest, and we're doing the same thing to the animals. So it's an interesting concept. Maybe we should do a show on it one day, because the facts are out there. It's just a lot of people don't know what the facts are, and when you hear the statistics, they're actually kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I mean, you know, even in the simplistic thoughts in my head, I mean, keeping it really simple without any of that information, it is what it is. I mean, that's how people survived way back when. I mean, really way back when. So when we do, like, talk about people going hungry, there was there's a commercial on television right now that has some very, very young kids quoting some of our forefathers. Martin Luther King gets quoted a lot for some of the things that he said. None of the names are coming to me, but they get quoted about, you know, what's right about seeing a kid picking through the garbage so that they have something to eat. And the fact of the matter is that when we have all that garbage, you have to realize that there's more food than what we need. I mean, you know,
right.
It's that simple. So I don't think a lot of people today, unless they're really far removed from everything that's going on in the real world, go without something to eat on days like Thanksgiving. There's a lot of places where they can go and get something. A lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, so not that my heart still doesn't go out to the people that are doing without to that degree. I don't mean that. I mean, you know, the food is just a part of it, you know. But I do think that there's a lot of people that are out there doing a lot of good things. And sometimes we get caught up on all the bad stuff that's going on, and we forget to mention that there's some amazing things going on out there in the world today, some amazing people, some good people that are moving forward and doing the things that we need. But I do think it's an interesting topic to talk about what you just said and maybe getting some facts and figures and putting things into some real reality for people to look at when they get angry and upset about what they think is going on in the world, because a lot of it isn't as bad as what we're led to believe by the forces that they think.
Exactly.
You know, so.
And the solutions are more readily at hand if people were correctly informed. That's the issue, is that if people probably would make different choices, even if you went vegetarian part-time, it doesn't mean you have to become a vegetarian, you know, 100% of the time. Even if you chose to do vegetarian part-time, it would still benefit it because it would reduce the demand on the animals, which would reduce the demand on the acres to feed the animals. You know, everything would have a trickle-down effect. That's why they say it would take about 10 years. But the solution's there. It's just that people aren't being taught this. You know, when you start teaching people about environmental things, things generally do change. You know, it happens slowly. It usually starts as a grassroots. But, you know, I wonder sometimes why the powers that be, I mean, I know what the answer is, but, you know, why the powers that be don't make this more common knowledge, why you don't see it in the news, and there's reasons why you don't, because there's huge profits in those industries. So it would make a very interesting show to kind of put some of that out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's don't forget, there's, like I mentioned before, there's that fear factor. So the more often the powers that be, your advertisers, your people that make their millions, grow their millions, it's about leading you to believe that without this, you're not going to be okay. Without that, you'll never survive.
Exactly.
This,
right.
You're going to be in trouble. I mean, how about, you know, well, I know we've talked about this before on several occasions in regard to what is really important and what is just media crap, you know, making people believe that this is so and that is so, and then you research it and find out, in some ways you could look at it like this, but then there's 15 other ways that you can look at it that don't sound quite so, you know, fearful. Just fearful.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Heard every day. Look at what the media did to us way back in, when was it? Was the early 60s or still in the 50s when they convinced everybody that they had to have bomb shelters? Do you remember what era that was, Shel? You know, when everybody...
It was a little bit before me, so I was probably in the 50s. There was still some fervor about it, but I think it really was... Because it had to be around the 50s because it was shortly after the World War.
Right, yeah, and that was in the late 40s, so probably the 50s. And it was all about... You know, people were hoarding canned goods.
Yep.
Hoarding all kinds of seeds and stuff to grow things in a underground facility that they would build, that people spent a lot of their hard-earned cash to get accommodated. And all because somebody speculated that we might get attacked by one of the other countries, and we'd need to be safe, and we'd need to have plenty of food. Now, I think a lot of that was generated from even the earlier wars, you know, the war between the states and stuff like that, where soldiers went in and took over southern homes and depleted all their, you know, back in the day.
Well, that was really because of the nuclear threat that Russia... proposed, you know,
right.
until there was a nuclear a threat, people, you know, I mean, for hand-to-hand combat or somebody coming in with machine guns wasn't an issue because, you know, how are they going to get on our borders? But, you know, for a country to send a bomb over to here and bomb out certain areas, that was a realistic threat. And although it seemed ridiculous, because if they did that to us, you know, like that movie War Games with Matthew Broderick, which I thought was a brilliant show, and at the end they showed if there was ever a nuclear strike, no, there would be no winner, because if they struck us, we'd strike them, and we'd end up annihilating the world anyway, you know. So, but the belief was that there was a possibility that we would be attacked anyway, as ludicrous as it seemed, because then we would just bomb them back. But that's what that was all about, was because of the nuclear threat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know, but I that's why they went underground. But the hoarding and the all that kind of stuff had to have affected by what happened during the war between the states. I knew Southern families who had family folklore that they would talk about how Union soldiers would come in and steal all the meat, and they'd just eat it and then throw away what they didn't want and left those homes devastated. Well, look at Gone with the Wind. There was another one that put it in pretty dramatic places for people. So, yeah, hanging on to what you have. So it started, I imagine people have always been fearful of having somebody take their stuff away from them. But when it comes to food, it gets even more, I don't know, more vicious, more hurtful, all of those kind of things. But again, if all you have is seeds, somebody gives you, you know, a rotten tomato, plant some more tomatoes. I mean, it can be done. People have done it for years. Corn. You know, there's just so many things. So I think a part of what we have going on today has to do with not being taught. Kids are taught today how to use the world of technology instead of the world of technology that sits on their shoulders.
Exactly. Exactly. Our brains are more powerful than we think they are. And
right.
Our ability to understand and to create and to, you know, I mean, a lot of the inventions around the world literally were an idea that popped into somebody's mind because they opened their mind to consider things. And just because everybody around them said that'll never work, they were like, no, I believe I can make this work. You know, I mean, if you go back through history, a lot of what we take for granted today was started by somebody, invented by somebody, thought of by somebody that was told by everybody else around them they were nuts. And thank God they didn't believe those people and went forward for it. So the more you open your mind to new ideas, information comes to you, including on ideas on how to feed yourself. Including, I mean, you'd be surprised as to when you open your mind and you say, I want to understand this more, how thoughts all of a sudden seem to literally come out of nowhere. And that's because we can tap into a greater knowledge than we have from reading books.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so important for all of us to put things in perspective, don't you think? I mean, don't you think a lot of times we forget to put things in perspective? You try to grasp something that's going on in your life, and you let it take over your life. And I think that's what we, my family, and I put into perspective when we sit around and do what we did last night, laugh at each other. I think that's when we understand the realness about having each other. It's not about the gifts that we give to each other or the rides that we give to somebody whose car is on the blank or the, you know, it's really not about any of that stuff. It's about all of that stuff, but not about any of that stuff, if that makes sense. It's really about the togetherness, the being there when somebody's needed, not about each issue, but about being there when the, you know, one day it's you doing for me, the next day it's me doing for you. That's the way it's supposed to be. And I think that every now and then you just need to, you know, relish the wealth in that instead of worrying about how many presents you're going to buy for each person in your life or who you have to cut out this year. I've heard people say, well, I'm going to, I have to cut out this one, I have to cut out that one. I think to myself, why don't you just spend less on everybody and just do a little something for each person? We had somebody in our lives for a long time who just used to amaze me, Becky. Every holiday, Becky didn't, she was not one, I don't think I ever got a gift from Becky, ever, that she didn't literally have a hand in. You know what I mean? She'd bake us stuff. She'd make us homemade zucchini bread. She would.
Yep, I remember all that. I remember all that. Even for my birthday, she gave me something that was handmade, a little magnet that she painted with an inspiration. I still have it on my refrigerator to this day. It was something she made herself. It was beautiful. It had an inspirational message that to this day makes me smile when I look at it. And, you know, so there's something to be said about those type of gifts.
I think that they are absolutely the most appreciated in the long run. And she was, you know, and I've gotten some beautiful gifts from different people. I've been a very blessed person in that respect. But I will never forget how Becky would do something for almost everybody back in the day when there was only like 45 of us on the property, employees. She did something for everybody. You know, even, like I said, those little magnets that she made for all of us one year. Somebody else who was like that was Yvonne. I have, in my office, I have several gifts that were made by Yvonne that I still have. So, you know, don't rethink it. Don't overthink it, I guess is what I want to say. Just do something from your heart, because eventually that's the only place you really should be able to give from anyway, is from your heart. So I want to talk, though, about, we'll continue talking about the holidays, because maybe it'll help some people who struggle with the holidays, and talk about letting go of not being able to be outrageously giving. Another thing, an old friend of mine that I'm still friends with, we met when we were 17, she used to make books for people, and they were just little handwritten books, and for their birthdays or something like that, she would make them promises of what she would do for them. I will wash your car on Tuesday. On Wednesday and Friday, I'll walk your dog so you don't have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. She'd do that for different people. I loved it. I thought to myself, what a cute idea. And all it cost her was her time and the paper and pen that she wrote it with. So
that was a great idea. I think I got something like that years ago. I don't remember who gave it to me, but I remember getting something like that, and I thought it was the most clever thing. And it does. It's kind of a neat thing to get from somebody.
I think it is, too. I think it shows a lot of heart and very, very special. So there's an idea for people who are struggling with stuff like that, too. And, of course, we have a lot of friends now that make things like jewelry and stuff like that, which is another lovely gift. To get something that's handmade from somebody that you care about is a lovely gift as well. But we'll continue to talk about the holidays and hopefully help people through this stressful time of year. Today is Black Friday. For those of you who ventured out, I hope you have lots of Aleve in your pocket, because you're going to ache all over from being run into by carts and all of the above. It's a horrible time to be out in the public. Horrible time. Been there, done that. Don't do it anymore. We talked a couple times about the celebrity accusations, and of course now last couple of days, I haven't watched much TV. I haven't seen too much about Bill Cosby, but of course, people are either going, oh my God, how did all these people stay hidden in the woodwork and never, ever, ever say anything to anybody until now? And now they're just like everywhere, which makes you wonder. But then you also have the people that are saying, you know, nothing to gain. An older man who was Bill Cosby's, like an assistant, came forth, and he's in a nursing home now, and said that it was his job to guard the door and that he would have to pay people or pay women so that they didn't say anything to anybody. And a lot of them, they were struggling actors, and they, you know, they took the money and shut up. There was one on the other day from somebody that I've for a long time watched on Law and Order. One of the girls that was a lieutenant way back in the beginning days of Law and Order with Munch and all of them. And she did a very serious talk, and she said, yes, you know, he did certain things, and I just let go of it. And I think back in the day, young starlets might have thought that's what they deserved and that's what was happening to everybody, so maybe they didn't talk. So I have very mixed emotions about it. I'd like to think that he could still stay up there on in a good place that made me think he was really who he professed to be, but who knows? And I guess it's just up to the individual to make the decision whether or not they still want to hold them in high regard or not, because I don't know if we'll ever know the truth, ever.
Well, I think when you're talking about, I know what actress you're talking about, and I didn't know she was one of the accusers, but like I said, when it comes to, and I think at some point the truth always comes out. I don't think it's a situation of I don't know if we'll ever know the truth. I think the truth always eventually comes out, and that's why a lot of times iconic figures will fall, because they can deceive. They can deceive and cover up and pay people off and do this and do that. But truth is a funny thing. It's like cream. It's like heavy cream. It always has a way of rising to the top. And sometimes the truth of a situation comes out after a person's demise, which is sad because they didn't get to see their reputation restored or, you know, or themselves vindicated for a crime that was perpetuated against them. But sometimes, you know, it takes decades. Sometimes it takes longer than the person's around here. But that's the funny thing about truth. It always does come out, you know. And you can't do things that are illegal and immoral. And, you know, this is one of the things that I don't understand why people would want to live lives like that. But you see it all the time. And you see it in really, really high-profile people that are in the public eye, politicians, actors, actresses, sports figures, and then they have these, like, really goofy lives in the background that they're trying to keep secret. It's like, why would you even take a chance like that, you know? It does stun me sometimes when we learn about people that are in the public eye and how they do really, really catastrophically risky behavior just because they have the money to pay people off without realizing that, you know, at some point, that person you injured, that person you took advantage of, that person you hurt or violated in some way is going to get the strength to speak out against you, even if you paid them off with money. It only keeps them quiet for a short amount of time. So, and we've seen this with other high-profile people. We've seen it with other celebrities. We've seen it with politicians. And it's like, it's how do they not learn that eventually every truth does come out at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think for some people that's too close to reality. Some people shun reality at every corner.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, some people just have the tendency to to believe that if they build some kind of a where they're happy, a place around them, that's all that exists. And I think that's dangerous for the other people that are around them. Because most of the time, I can't live up to the fairy tale, I don't know, the fairy tale-ness of a grandma and a mom. I can't. I'm a human being and I try hard, but sometimes I'm just not that, you know, Mrs. Cleaver, so to speak. And
better than most.
But I think that it's a tough thing to do to people that you care about when you live in that kind of an existence where everything is supposed to be. Matter of fact, I have some of those tendencies thinking about how things are supposed to be. And very recently, I said, I don't know why I let things like that bother me. If it's not bothering somebody else, why should I let it bother me?
Exactly.
So, but it is a place that I think we all go, very sadly. And I try to keep that under control for myself. So, again, I hope that him and the other guy there that we talked about last week, the one from
Steve Collins.
Steve Collins. If they did something wrong, they deserve the ramifications because nobody should be allowed to get away with that just because they have money. If they didn't really do anything wrong, then they should be left alone. And there's a lot to be said for that bell was rung about 30 years ago, and you had the chance to answer that call then, and you didn't. So all you're doing now is causing pain and resentment, and you should have done it then. If it really happened to you, you should have said something then. Waiting 30 years and letting it happen to people is not
forgiving. I don't agree with that because of what we talked about, and a lot of times when a woman is victimized and she thinks she's the only one it ever happened to, and they feel ashamed and they feel that maybe somehow they played a part in it, and then one woman steps up and they're like, oh, my God, he did this to other women. And now they're older. Now they're more able to handle what's going on. They're not blaming themselves because they realize it happened to all these other women. That's how sometimes you get this tidal wave of complaints. It's not that they're being opportunists. It's just that, oh, my God, you know, it did happen to other women, and now they need to get it off their chest. So I don't think it's an idea that you're like, well, all of a sudden it pops into their heads and they're going to come out with this. I think there is something about a strength in numbers. And if you felt that you were the only one and that you made a stupid mistake one night and you just had to buck it up and deal with it, and now you realize that this individual is really just a predator, you're going to want vindication. You're going to want this individual brought to task. So do I like the fact that this went on for 30 years? No. If any one of those women had been brave enough to come against him, maybe he would have been stopped in his track decades ago and not harmed so many women. But I don't think there should be a statute of limitation on someone becoming brave enough to go after their attacker, because it is such an emotional thing. It does make you have to relive what happened to you, and especially if you're going against somebody who does have money and who is iconic, you stand a really, really good chance of coming out to look bad, to look like a gold digger or look like you're doing something that you're not, and this person being even coming out looking even better. So I think the risk involved for a lot of these women wasn't worth it because of who he was. But then when they found out there were so many other stories, like I said, strength in numbers, and they finally decided to say, yeah, that is true, that it happened to me too. These women aren't lying, that he did have that propensity. So, you know, I don't begrudge them for the time because I sort of understand it. I just wish that there had been one person that had been braver at that time, because it providing this is all true, and I'm kind of thinking it might be just because of some of the people coming forward that I know and I have a sense of respect for. The actress that you talked about a few minutes ago, she does a lot of community work and things like that. I mean, she's not a slouch when it comes to giving back to society with her success. So if she's one of the people that stood up, it kind of gives it a little bit more credence for me.
Well, and I agree with you. I don't disagree with anything you just said at all, but I'm just saying, you know, other people are feeling this way about some of this stuff and making it I don't know. I guess basically, I'm upset if it's really true. So part of me is making excuses. And
of course, that's
I guess
understandable.
Human. Mm-hmm. But
I think it's almost like finding out it's your uncle or your beloved uncle or somebody in your family. I mean, Bill Cosby was like somebody that he feels like a family member to a lot of us. So there's almost a level of betrayal there with considering that this might be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's it. I guess that betrayal is a good word. Betrayal is a good word, and it's a sad word as well. Nobody wants to be betrayed. And even though, you know, he's not my uncle, he's not my friend, he was somebody that I enjoyed. Well, it's like I felt personally hurt by Robin Williams taking his own life, because I felt like the world was a better place with him in it. And it would have been one thing to have him succumb to an illness or something, but to leave with intent hurt my feelings. So I guess it is about personal. I guess it is personal with Bill Cosby. I guess it was personal with Robin Williams as well. And I think we're always disappointed when we find out somebody that we put up a little bit on a pedestal, that they're human.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we often, especially with, you know, movie stars and celebrities and things like that. We've only got about 8 minutes left, and I want to tell people. I put a post on my Facebook page. It's on my main page, so if you go to my page, Renee Brewer on Facebook, you will see it. It's a guy by the name of Jonathan Gentry, and he's talking about the Ferguson, Missouri disaster with Michael Brown and all the stuff that happened there. And it's a close-up of his face. He's a black man, and he is obviously from some of the quotes that he says, he's a Christian, and he talks about the behavior that has taken place since the trial and the policeman that was that took the life of Michael Brown because he felt like he was being attacked, since he didn't get punished for that, and everybody went crazy and they set a car dealership on fire. They had people on the news early, I think it was Tuesday morning, who were trying to get their homes or their businesses back in order after all of the riots. And he talks so honestly, hurtfully. I'll be honest, some of the things he says are very hurtful, but most of it is just completely right on. Completely right on. He says, you want things to change, and this is how you act? How did you punish the police burning this down, or by doing this, or by doing that? How did you hurt anybody? Shelley, are you still there? Somebody's trying to call me on the phone.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. But it's all about, you know, you're not. It's not going to change until they change it. And he is just so right on. I thought about playing it for everybody, but I think it would drag on long. It's quite a long video. It's about 6 minutes. But if you get the opportunity, go to my Facebook page, and I'll again from my page so that it's on my front page. So if you're friends with me, you'll see it. He's honest, he's right, and he makes a very, very valid point. And the truth of the matter is, violence begets violence. It just does. you can't do something to somebody in retribution and change everything and make it all right. You cannot.
The only things that can heal this world are love and compassion, not fear, not hatred, not revenge. The only things that can heal a world, that can heal a family, a relationship, that can heal a country or a town, you know, or the world at large, is love and compassion. And until people start operating from that, like what happened with Mikey, that's one of the reasons why your message carries a lot of weight, because you walk your talk. You know, you weren't interested in revenge. You didn't want anything bad happening to the family. You wanted justice. You wanted something to happen to the boys from a legal standpoint so that they couldn't hurt somebody else, but you didn't want revenge. You didn't want to physically hurt them. You didn't want to hurt their families. You didn't go on this tirade about, you know, talking bad about their families. You operated from love and compassion. Your main concern was to heal Mikey and to help him get through this emotionally, physically, and in every other way, and to send compassion and forgiveness out to the family, because now they were going to have a long haul also in the legal system. Their minor children were losing their freedom for a very long time, you know, and that message rang so true because you literally walked your talk. And that's something that people, that this gang mentality does not deal with love and compassion. The good thing is that you can stir up gang mentality with love and compassion and have people want to go there. You can stir up a gang in either direction. So if you're going to be the type of person that's going to stir up a mob, then stir up a mob to do something positive to help a situation. You're upset about a decision, picket the police station, but don't go and burn down the car lot.
Mhm. Yeah. There's just so many different ways that you can do things that are right and fair without hurting somebody else or taking away from somebody else. It's just, there's no sense whatsoever in causing harm to somebody else in the name of righteousness, by the way. Righteousness is something that you should hold to yourself. Righteousness is something you feel about yourself. I used to tell people that I see they're down in the dumps and they're struggling with this and they're struggling with that. I said, first of all, you have to face your demons. Then you have to swallow a little bit of righteousness, because after you face your demons, then I want you to embrace the angels in you, all the good things, all the moments that you have thought about somebody else before you thought of yourself, the times that you have put somebody in front of you. I don't just mean in the line in the grocery store. I mean in life. That's, for me, that's righteousness. And that's that you deserve to observe is your own righteousness. It's not righteous to take away from somebody else, to harm somebody else because of something that was done to somebody else. It doesn't even make sense. Right? There's no sense in there. So I think we will all get to a better place if we go back to that old adage, which is about you, about making you. I'm sorry that Michael Brown, I'm being honest, I'm sorry that Michael Brown is gone, that his parents have to remain on this earth without their son. I'm sorry about that. I am. But I'm also sorry about the cop now who's ruined his life because of fear, because Michael Brown was misbehaving and wasn't doing what he should have been doing. And did his life need to be taken away from him? No, I don't think so. Not if you look at things at face value. But was there a choice when somebody else thought their life was going to be in jeopardy? Probably not. So put it in perspective, and certainly don't take it out on somebody. We're out of time. Everybody have a great, great weekend. We will be back, I hope, Monday morning. I'm going to try to do the show and get on the train by 9:45. So I hope you'll join us, and I'll be doing the show wherever I can get through on the computer. If I can't get through to the show, we won't have a show. But when I settle in on the 3rd in Michigan, then you'll hear from me again. But I will try to do the show on Monday and Tuesday as well. So God bless everybody. Have a great, great weekend. Bye-bye. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Renee. Happy Thanksgiving season to everybody. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend, and we'll speak to you next week.